It is a well-known phenomenon that after lunch on a day of retreat, the stillness in the hall may not be your wakefulness and liberation. It may be your sleepiness and digestion, right? And that's fine. We want to make room for your bellies to digest. It was beautiful food. Thank you, all of you that brought things. At the same time, we don't want to sleep through our day of practice. Well, you might want to sleep through your day of practice, but it's probably not your deepest intention. And we have in the tradition quite a lot of practices and reflections that are intended to bring urgency to this predicament of being alive and wanting to realize the depth of what's possible for us to realize. Can be very skillful to actually turn the fire up a little bit under our backsides. Not as a way of making us panic, but a way of bringing urgency. We don't know how long we have to live, actually. And what is it that we will have wanted to have cultivated during this lifetime? When we lay, if we have a deathbed, lay there. Or we may not have a deathbed. It may happen completely differently. Right? What is it we would have wanted to have dedicated this life to? Whatever that is, it may not be practice for you, but whatever it is, get clear about it. Right? Maybe practice and service. It may be many, many things that we could dedicate a whole day to that usefully. Sometimes we need to turn the fire up because we think, oh, it won't matter if I forget about my deepest intention for the next 3 days. It doesn't matter. Right? But it does, actually. It does matter. And this isn't to make us feel bad. It's to turn the fire up so we can cook. So we can really cook. And develop what we want to develop. And wake up to what is actually available here and now. So one of the ways this is done in the tradition is through many different kinds of reflections. That we use the mind to reflect, and it can bring this rousing urgency. This is one teaching that they chant every night in one of the Zen traditions that I've practiced in. They chant this together. And just take a breath and just sense the effect in yourself. Let me respectfully remind you, that's how it begins. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes. An opportunity is lost. Let us awaken, awaken. Take heed, do not squander your life. Take a breath with that. See if and where it landed. Or if it was rejected. It's also interesting. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes. An opportunity is lost. Let us awaken, awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. Breathing in and breathing out. Any one words from you, the effect in your, may not rouse you, maybe many different effects, but just like to hear a few, one words, where does that affect, how does that affect you? Anybody? And call it out. Stunned?
True.
In your heart. What happens in your heart?
Some sort of feeling.
And you did that. Do you know what kind of feeling? More alive. Okay. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Someone else?
True.
It's like, that's true. Yeah. We recognize the truth of something. The time swiftly passes part. It doesn't seem to when we get to London retreats at 10 o'clock and we think, oh my God, sometimes I've got till 4:30. a very peculiar relationship with time. I remember one of my uncles, he got to be about 75, and we were on the phone, and he said something like, "Kath, you know, it seems to speed up when you get to my age. It's just going quicker." He goes, "And it's really scary." Now, this is kind of big, this big builder. And he was saying something at the depth of his heart. "This is, it's like it's going really too quick. I don't know what happened." Right? Yeah, any other responses?
Overwhelming,
yeah. Do you know what it overwhelms? Is it like, ugh?
Well, for me it's personal. So if there's a personal thing, then it needs to be. And time does it.
And time, so it touches you very personally, and there's an emotion that's touched, and what you're calling overwhelmed, right? Yeah, it can touch the emotion in the heart.
Fear.
Yeah, that's the side we've got to look for, where it leads to fear rather than urgency. And there's a curious. I'll speak about that. Yeah.
Yes, but how?
It's like, okay, but help. Show me, yeah.
I think it's probably aversion, but my initial reaction to the first line was like it's a sort of categorical statement, which may or may not be true.
Which one? Life and death are of supreme importance.
I mean, lots of things are of supreme importance.
Yeah.
Why pick life and death?
They're just two small ones.
They're big ones, but there's a lot of big ones, and it's mm-hmm. like disputable what is. I mean, it's kind of a sort of a statement of faith.
Right. You're right. It's telling you what's important. I think you're not alone. It's kind of telling you this is important. Did you know? Mm-hmm. Right. So there's a kind of reaction to that. Yeah. So don't tell me what's important. Mm-hmm. My kids are important. This is important.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was just kind of, it's up to me to decide it's in my path to decide what's important.
Yeah, you're right. So maybe we could take the imperative piece, the sort of the categorical piece out of it. Mm. But it is a bit true, isn't it? Life and death are pretty important. Thank you. But it's good to see that, because any time things are worded, you know, we are going to have our own responses based on us, right? Yeah, anything else? Thank you for that. Sadness. Yeah.
It's the word squander that stops me in my tracks. The word squander.
You do not squander your life. Yeah, what happens when you get stopped in your tracks?
Well, the thing that comes to mind, I'm not trying to be facetious here. It's like you're walking around, somebody says your flies are undone.
Mm-hmm. So are you shocked?
Yeah, you get this feeling of a gut being stopped.
Is it like you've done it wrong? Is it a blame, or is it just a...
No, it's a urgency.
You know? An urgency, okay, good.
Stop messing around,
yeah. So we want, if it's a little bit like the... where urgency becomes fear, or where the stop messing around, which has a wisdom and a wake-up, becomes a, I'm doing it wrong, and then we blame. We want to dissect both of those. Any language is going to be slightly problematic. Thank you. So if you're left, any of you, with, oh my God, I have squandered, I've done it wrong, I'm bad, etc., etc., that's not the intention at all. Please leave that one outside in the rain. Right? And also the difference between urgency and fear, I think it's very important. There are many such reflections in the Dharma where we're really asked to be stopped in our tracks and stop messing around. And what can happen is that there could be a sort of a panic. Sometimes our nervous system, some of us already carrying some charge or some... we're already a little on edge, right? We actually need the Dharma at times, and it's not sometimes at the beginning, sometimes in the middle, to be a place where we can discharge. We can come to the aspect that is soothing, that is holding, but it's compassionate, right? And we might need to emphasize that more. Ultimately, they're not different. There's a great compassion in saying, wake up, right? There's a great soothingness, a great capacity to soothe when we really do get stopped in our tracks. However, we want to see where it, if it's starting to lead to more. Right, then let it go. It's not the time. It's not the moment. Right? You can put it on the back burner, as they say. But other times, we actually need to light the fire a little bit. To sit in this sitting as if it was the last one. Right? Have any of you met Martine Batchelor, who sometimes teaches here? And her teacher was then Master Kusan, I think he was called. And apparently what was a big part of precipitating a lot of opening for him, or however you like to call these, his awakening, is that he was motivated by his friend was in a great deal of suffering. a lot of suffering. And he was so much loved, this friend, and so motivated to practice for his benefit. He started to practice but got really sleepy. So he took the intention to stand on tiptoes for 3 days and nights, I think. You can check it out with Martine. To stand on tiptoes for 3 days and three nights. Such was his wish to really wake up for the benefit of his friend. So that's how his fire got lit, and it translated into action. We light the fire, and then there's the how. We want to translate it into action, translate it into intention and into action. Right? And the action might be sitting, and the action might be practicing with each other. The action might be certain work we do in the world, certain way we want to wake up. There are reflections in most traditions that they chant or recite or use to align themselves, to align ourselves daily with this reality. Right? And I don't have time today to share much of that with you. But if you go deep into any tradition, you'll find such teachings. I've already spoken a very small bit this morning about death. Skillful reflection on death. And I know Yanai has a day here in December that's completely dedicated to that theme, so I'm not going to use the rest of the afternoon to talk about that. You can come then, hear more about death as a wise reflection. I just want to let you know, for those that don't know, Gaia House now, the centre where I regularly teach, we've recently been given a real human skeleton. And this person who was a man, in full skeleton, now he's just a skeleton, he's sitting like everyone on this blue mat, cross-legged, with his hands in the mudra, in our walking meditation room. Mm-hmm. Amongst the plants, right? And this is not an uncommon thing to find in Buddhist cultures, in monasteries and places of practice, as a way of saying, look, wake up. This too is you, right? So people on retreat now, if they wish, again, if they don't feel ready for it, then they don't have to do it. But sometimes we feel inspired, or people feel inspired to go sit with the skeleton. Just sit opposite him, it, and breathe and reflect that this too was somebody who got up in the morning, or didn't get up in the morning, right, depending on how he was doing, probably, who wanted happiness, who wanted safety, who wanted ease, who worked to get his livelihood together or didn't know how to get his livelihood together. Right? Who struggled with sensitivity or fear or dread. Person born of a mother and a father just like us. Not so different. And to sit with that, we can reflect and we can also see how it impacts us. One meditator said he sat with the skeleton and his heart, he started to cry. He said his heart open to how naked this person was. Naked of skin and organs, they're the bits, they all go sooner than our skeleton. But naked of any pretense, naked of any mask, just transmitting the sheer fact of the human body, which is, this is its direction, actually. And how much we can let that in, really let it in, not just intellectually, but where our cells receive that, that knowing. Because very often if we sit across from another human that isn't a skeleton, it's a little bit more complex, right? There's a few, usually a little few more masks going on. It's okay. Ways we want to be seen, things we want to be seen for, not seen for. Our likes, our dislikes, do they like me, do they... Right, but here it's just the very basic, stripped back to a basic that we all share. That we all share. Someone sat with a skeleton and saw, immediately had a sense of their own skeleton. It's like it was just, there's the bones, and they felt their own bones, the ribs. Suddenly they got them from the inside, sensed them. That kind of structure, these thigh bones, these kneecaps, really sense it from the inside. That's kind of holding us up, as well as this life force that's still currently breathing through us while we're here. That animates us. Look, the difference between me and a corpse right now is there's something extraordinary keeping this one propped up. Right? Kind of amazing. This is what the reflection on death supports us to see, not to get more afraid, but to start to wonder and see the preciousness of what this is while we're still here. Remember when I had the good fortune to sit with my father's dead body a day or two after he died, and many things happened, of course, and many things. Many reflections that were personal at first. You know, his haircut was the haircut I gave him, right, a couple of weeks before. Still had the dodgy scissor marks on it. And, you know, it's still, oh. And the little scar under his lip. It's my dad. Right, the personal reflections, my loss. My dad, my curiosity, what's he feel like? Now, all of that, some feelings also, the sadness, the loss, so the mystery, like, what is this? What is this? Many things happen, but the one thing that I want to tell you is that when I got on the bus back to Croydon afterwards, and I sat in the Whitgift Centre, kind of, you know, rather a lot when we lose someone, a lot passing through. But it suddenly struck me, I saw the buskers playing the instruments and the families arguing and the various things happening. And I wondered, what is that that keeps them animated? What is that that is the difference between being alive and being dead? What is it that's, in a way, we're kind of corpses in the making, right? On one level. But until we are, there's something quite extraordinary that's happening here. Something quite extraordinary that props us up. Can we start to get really interested in that here and now? Because that's the only place we're going to find out. And that's an interest that can take us very deep, and practice is the way to start to access that. Right. So I want just to, as we go into sit, why don't we, if you need to move your legs and stretch your knees, what we're going to do is do a little chant together and then sit. Okay. So if you need to shake your legs, do that now. When we really let, more able to let the reality of death in, it actually allows us to contact the life, this aliveness. That's where that reflection is taking us. It's not taking us to, it's not intended to take us to despair or depression that may happen as a stage, right? But we need to meet that if it does. Actually intended to take us to respecting the preciousness of this human existence, this existence. So this chant is in English, and it's taken from what's called the Diamond Sutra, and the words are, you should see this fleeting world, a drop of dew, a bubble on a stream, lightning in a summer cloud, a phantom and a dream. Right. So it's pointing to this very ephemeral, fragile, extraordinary, precious system. And there's a melody and there's the words, so it might seem like a lot to get your head around to start with. So if I just go through the four metaphors, it's you should see this fleeting world, a drop of dew. I'll make that gesture. It might help you. A drop of dew. You get that? The best, my best approximation. A bubble on a stream, I discovered yesterday, isn't much different. You have to pay attention here. A drop of dew, a bubble on a stream. Okay, lightning in a summer cloud, I'll point up. And a phantom and a dream. Right. On certain level, like a shimmer, shimmering appearance. And I'll do this. I don't know if I can do both the melody as well. We'll see. I'll chant it for you. And as you get it, we'll go through it together. And let's just see how it affects you. Maybe only serve to keep you awake, which is one good thing after lunch. Or there may be more. So see how it affects you. Some of you know it, actually. Oh, you should see this fleeting world, a drop of dew, a bubble on a stream, lightning in a summer cloud, a phantom and a dream.